Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
Well, you're very welcome along to this week's edition of Friday Night Racing here on Off the Ball. Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie. You can follow the Twitter account at HRI Racing and the hashtag is Every Racing Moment. We're going to start today with a highlight from last weekend. This is A Plutard romping home last weekend at Haydock. Have a listen.
With just one left to jump in the Betfair chase, A Plutard over safely with a long lead over Royal Pagai in second. Clondor Castle and Chatham Street Ladder fighting out third. There's only one horse in this, the first Irish train winner of the Betfair chase, and a golden year for Rachel Blackmore continues. A Plutard, a class apart.
Yes, that trainer is Henry de Bromhead, and I'm delighted to say he's back with this. Henry, good afternoon to you. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks. And yourself?
That sounds pretty sweet, I suspect.
Yeah, it does. Certainly does. Yeah, it was a great day. He just did it really well. Rachel was brilliant on him. And he's only a seven-year-old. You know, he's achieved so much at quite a young age. Great to see him back like that and look forward to the rest of the season.
So, first Irish-trained winner of this specific race. At what point in your planning for the year did you go, that's where we're going, that's where A Plutard is going to end up? How did that decision come to be made?
Funny, it was Chris Richardson and Richard Thompson suggested it last spring. We were contemplating going to Aintree after Cheltenham. And they were sort of saying, let's aim towards the Gold Cup again next year and maybe miss Aintree and aim for this race. And as soon as they said it, it seemed a great idea. He obviously is a far better horse going left-handed than right. For the last 2 years, I've managed to get him beaten in the Fortria over 2 miles starting back. So it seemed once we knew he stayed 3 miles so well, it seemed a very obvious target for him.
You see, when you say that kind of offhanded, he's much better going left-handed than right-handed. Why is that? Do you have any idea why that works for some horses and not others? How does that come to be?
Yes, funny. You know, I actually don't know. I really don't. Why do some people, you know, some people left-handed, right-handed? I'm not sure if it's like that, but plenty of horses are, you know, they're like that. And it took me a while to work it out. He kept getting beaten going right-handed. And I went to Punchestown with him as a novice. We'd only just got him from France. And he was beaten going right-handed the first day. Then he won, beating the subsequent Arkle winner the next day at Nace going left. And then he was beaten by a horse sort of rated 140. And I couldn't work out why he was beaten. So it was either that or trip or whatever, but I still wasn't sure. And then we went to Cheltenham that year, and completely by default I got him really well handicapped, and he romped home in a handicap chase going left-handed. So eventually we worked out he was better left than right, and I can't really give you any reason.
That's mad, isn't it? Like, that I think that goes to kind of just highlight just how quirky the whole game is.
Yeah, totally, totally. It's a constant puzzle.
It's arguably the best way to handicap a horse. If you know, I don't have any doubt. Like Henry, I don't think actually knew, and as he's explained to you there, sometimes you learn on the job. But if you know a horse is better going left-handed, it's perfectly legitimate to run them in right-handed maiden hurdles. And then you end up, you know, having a well-handicapped horse. But like that performance at Cheltenham, Henry, did it surprise you how well he won on the day at that time?
Oh, yeah, of course it did. Because we still didn't really, you know, we didn't know then. And absolutely. Now, and some horses would very obviously, you could very obviously see they're better. You know, they might hang right or they might hang left or whatever, or jump violently right or jump violently left. This guy was no different, bar he was just 20 pounds worse on a right-handed track. And so I can categorically tell you we had no idea at that stage. And it was only when he romped in at Cheltenham we sort of started to really think about it. And then we still went to Punchestown on a right-handed track, and managed to get him well beaten again, albeit by Delta Ware.
Go on, Johnny.
That was the end of that then.
Yeah, I'm fair enough. Can we let's talk about Honeysuckle, because obviously it's the new season reemergence, and I think there's massive excitement about just the quality of horse that we've seen over the last couple of years, Henry. One of the great things about the last 12 months has been the two times on TV where the camera work is in the car and it's following Honeysuckle, and then she just goes through the gears and there's this. It's kind of like Sonia O'Sullivan when she was in her pomp winning the Golden League, which is now the Diamond League, where you were just waiting for it to happen. And when it does happen, it's such a joy to watch an absolute maestro at the elite level tearing apart another field who are elite. So what's that experience been like for you to watch those moments? Because I know naturally you're a worrier and there's no guarantee it's going to happen every time. But when it does happen, that's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. It's electric, you know, to see her in the Irish Champion Hurdle, the way she picked up and the confidence of Rachel to drive on there the third last, you know, still a long way from home. And she just said there was not, you know, she was just so within herself. She had to let her go on. And then in the Champion Hurdle again, it's incredible. I suppose coming down to the second last, I thought in the Champion Hurdle we were starting to struggle, this thing is slipping.
No worries.
Coming to the second last, we were starting to struggle, and then she jumped the second last, and suddenly she was on the bridle again, and she just powered away from them. I mean, it's incredible to see it. Yeah.
Does she have that speed at home at some stage and you're like, ooh, can't wait to see what this is like on the track? Like, when do you realise that this is a superstar at the absolute elite level? How quickly in training do you go, ooh? And is that a time thing at home? How does that happen?
No, it never really at home. She wouldn't blow you away at home. She worked nicely there a couple of times before when we first got her, before we ran her. And it's, you know what, it's on the track. You just sort of see them progress. And I find it very hard judging them at home, to be honest. I kind of like ours progressing on the track anyhow. So I'm sort of seeing it when everyone else is as well. And to what level, you just keep dipping and see where they get to. Especially with jumpers, you know, flat horses, it's different. You can work them out nearly over the trip they're going to run. There's no obstacles, obviously, but with national hunt horses, you know, it could be jumping hurdles or jumping fences that crowns them, or you know, if you were working them over 2 miles or 3 miles every time trying to find out how good they were, you'd just have them burnt out, you know. So I find with the jumpers, you're better off just let them sort of progress themselves. That's what suits us anyhow, but you know, everyone has different ways of doing it.
It's obviously working quite well at the moment. There's a good piece today by Ronan O'Gara talking about periodization and making sure that you're ready to perform on the big occasion. It's been a buzzword in soccer in particular over the last decade or so, and obviously it's coming into all sports at this stage. I always wonder about racing and how you try and peak for the different periods of the year when the races are the most important and the most valuable. How do you do that? How do you, is it start at the end of the year and try and work back? Is that the best way of doing it? Or does it actually depend on a case-by-case basis how the horse is going at home?
Yeah, I think it's whatever, you know, it depends on various things. But obviously you'd never want to run them if you weren't happy with them. But it's sort of, I would say with a lot of them, yeah, you'd start at where you want to peak and work back from there. With these sort of, you know, with the likes of Honey, though, you're trying to peak every time, you know, like at each, and she's only good. She's not really progressing. She's going straight into grade ones now. So it's a little bit harder, and especially for, here's me getting my excuses out already, especially for first run of the season, you know, you don't want to be getting, you know, too stuck in bearing in mind you've got the whole season ahead of you, but also, you know, she's a rock star, and you want to try and maintain her her unbeaten record. So trying to balance it, it isn't easy.
The unbeaten record, Henry, fascinates me because it's precious. Like, it really is precious. And so few horses retire with an unbeaten record, which she obviously might. Now, it's a long shot, but she might. And how much, like, I know you feel pressure going to the races, but the pressure with her must be almost unbearable at times.
Yeah, it can be. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Johnny. You've just added fuel to the fire. Thanks a million. I'm trying to play down the unbeaten record, saying, oh, sure, they all get beaten sometime. So, look, it's going to, I would imagine it'll happen sometime, but yeah, you would be under pressure. But like, you can only do what you can do, can't you? You know, so you try and get everything as right as you can. This is probably the toughest one, the first one of the year. We've given her plenty of work. She seems really well. She's in great form. So fingers crossed she'll put her best foot forward. But we do have a long season ahead of us.
Well, it's like, you know, bookmakers will try to, if you go into a betting shop, they'll try to lure you in with odds that look great. So, like, they'll put up, say, there was a bet this season, Mo Salah to score in his next six games was 25-1, and that looks amazing value. But when you work it out, it's actually not. And that's how hard it is to win race after race after race. And I imagine with her as well, you've spoken about this. She knows she's good. Like, you've spoken about how her actual personality has changed since she's gone on this winning run.
Pretty much so. I just went to check her legs there now, and Coleman, who writes her, said to me this morning she was really angry, and I said, is that a good sign or a bad sign? And he said, I think it's good. So I just went to check her legs there now before I came on, and she wouldn't let me near her. Like, she ears back and she just wouldn't let me near her. So I went and got a few carrots, and all of a sudden we were the best of friends. And according to Coleman, that's a good sign.
I think that's one of the cool things about her story, because, like, it's so intertwined with Rachel Blackmore. And I was just speaking to Ger before we came in air. Like, I think Rachel Blackmore winning big races on a Saturday in Britain is great for racing. But the Honeysuckle story herself, like, she has an amazing character yourself, as you revealed, and she's like, she knows she's good.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. Yeah, she does. And as I said, she came in, quiet little timid lady, filly. And now she's just a sad. She's a bit of a prima donna now. She's just a bit of a prima donna now. Yeah.
When you have the success with Honeysuckle that you had last year, does that automatically have an impact on what your plans for this year will be in terms of trying to protect the unbeaten record, but making sure that she gets to the biggest races possible so that you can take advantage of the fact that you've got one of the best horses in the world at the moment? How is that tension, or is it a tension?
I think we're aiming towards the champion hurdle again. We committed to that during the summer, and she's really only at the moment, so long as things go the right way, she's sort of, it's the same format as last year, and if you wanted to maintain your unbeaten record, you might go for slightly lesser races, but it's about competing in the big races for us anyhow, and trying to see and show how good she is, we've been very fortunate that we've won them all thus far. But, like, as I say, her season is four grade ones. Everyone would love to try and beat her. I'm sure her opponents, obviously, they want to win them as much as we do. So we're gearing towards that, and see how we get on, says he nervously.
I can see that this is a little bit of torment for you, because you continuously talk about this amazing horse. We'll move on to something else in 2 minutes. Classical Dream is not in.
I love talking about her.
Okay, fair enough.
It
doesn't add to the pressure, I'm sure. Classical Dream not in the declarations for the race on Sunday. So where do you see the main threat coming from?
There's plenty there. I fear everything always. It's a grade one. They're good horses. You see Sky Ace at 33-1. She won the mare's grade one novice there last spring. The horse that she just beat last year, memory's gone so bad, but he, you know, very good. They're all good horses, you know, so it's a grade one. Like, it's they're all a danger in my mind.
Well, it's a bit, the betting is a bit mad, Henry. Now, I know you're like, the betting doesn't concern you, but like, she's a raging hot favorite, 4-7. Saldier is up to 162, £3 below Honeysuckle. I mean, it shouldn't be like entirely straightforward. This is a good race.
Yeah, very much so. Now, obviously, we get our £7 allowance as well. So officially, we're sort of £10. But yeah, I totally get you. Yeah, I mean, it was funny. I thought similar to Bob last week, you know, in a very competitive beginner's chase. Sorry, something gone wrong there.
No worries.
You know, to see him 3-1 on or whatever he was, like, it's incredible. I mean, I don't know, like, someone said there were 7 horses rated over 140 over hurdles last week. And he's 3-1 on, and same with her. Yeah, I totally agree, Johnny. It seems she seems extremely short.
We did a podcast with Davey Roach there just before. Today, and his love for Bob Olinger, I don't know if he's in love with the woman, but if he loves her as much as he loves Bob Olinger, how good is this horse? He's absolutely raving about him.
Really, was he? Yeah, no, Davey. He's pretty passionate. He's passionate about all of them. In fairness to him, he's brilliant at what he does, and obviously a massive part of our team. I'd imagine his wife Nicole might worry a little bit about Bob. Yeah.
I had one last question about Honeysuckle. Pardon my ignorance, when it comes to the whole breeding and all that kind of stuff, I really am very much a neophyte. Will Honeysuckle, when she retires from National Hunt, be much sought after? Will you cover her with some of the fastest flat horses? What happens when she finishes as a National Hunt horse?
So Kenny Alexander, her owner, has set out to have a good band of broodmares, National Hunt broodmares, and that's been his policy, orchestrated by Peter Maloney of Rathmore Stud, to source well-bred mares that can perform at the highest level. And obviously Honey ticks all those boxes. Funny, when we were buying her pedigree, I remember saying to Peter, he had said, keep an eye out for well-bred mares. And I kind of rang him and I said, look, I'm not sure if her pedigree will be good enough, but we were very impressed by her performance. She could be a nice mare. So she will, I'd imagine, a touch wood, retire to Kenny's farm. And yeah, she'll be sent to, I'm not sure who they will decide to go to. I mean, but she'll be sent to the best of stallions, probably more National Hunt sires. But, you know, there's very good sort of Derby winners that stand as flat stallions that you might consider going to as well. But she'd probably be going to a sort of middle distance, high performing stallion, you'd imagine, when she does retire.
It was a very fair question, Ger. And I suppose what's worth pointing out here, as much as she's a once-in-a-lifetime mare, Solarina was a previous winner of the Hatton's Grace. Now, how many times she won it? But Solarina produced 6 foals. 2 of them were okay. 3 of them didn't win at all. One of them just won its first race the other day. And this is the thing, Henry. Like, and there's a theory out there as well that these incredibly good racehorses, that they're not necessarily as good at being a broodmare as some horses who didn't race at all. But that's by the by. But this thing is obviously not guaranteed. You don't know what's going to happen.
No, very much so. Totally, especially with National Hunt mares. You can see plenty of them that don't go on as good brood mares. So, yeah, look, it'll be interesting. But hopefully that's a bit away from our perspective. And yeah.
I was going to ask, because again, I don't know, is there a clock ticking, like the biological clock ticking? It's a real thing. I suspect that there's a cutoff point from an age perspective that you obviously know at some point, right, well, this is going to be the last season when you start.
I'd imagine it would happen in the next couple of years. I wouldn't like to say for sure, because I haven't spoken to anybody about it. But so it's actually the better way to answer that is it's entirely down to Kenny and what he'd like to do, and to Honey's performance and how she is as well. You know, unlike Flat, where you might rush them, you know, get them to stud quicker. I think with National Hunt, you know, while Honey's enjoying it and everyone's enjoying having Honey, I would imagine she'll continue is probably the best way to answer that, actually.
That makes perfect sense, yeah.
And the other thing, Ger, as well, like Davy Roach said he'd be gutted if she were beaten, but I think I get the impression Honeysuckle herself would be absolutely gutted if she ever lost a race.
Yeah, probably. She's very competitive, you know, and she loves winning. Yeah, like all of us, and the pilot on her back loves it as well. So, yeah, look, of course, it'd be disappointing, but they're horse races, and that happens.
And while we're getting carried away, Joe, Jason Knight reminds me a little bit of young Roy Keane. While we're in full buzz at the moment, I think I'll just throw that in there and heap unnecessary pressure on the show.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
So that's this Sunday at Ferry House at 2:40. As Johnny said, you've big runners in the UK on Saturday as well. Is that something relatively new, Henry, that you would have had as many runners going to the UK as often as you have at the moment?
It is new, yeah, it is. For us, like I said, the Betfair Chase made so much. It probably wouldn't have been in our sights that early in the season before, but as soon as the connection said it made a lot of sense. They're obviously based in the UK, so it was fantastic to see Richard Thompson and his three sons up at Haydock the other day. And, you know, so that race made huge sense. And funny, similarly with Eclat de Rear this week, he unseated in the RSA when going okay. And his owner, Peter Davies, is based in England as well. And only a few weeks after that, he suggested the Hennessy, or what's now the Ladbrokes, the Hennessy. And again, as soon as he said it, I went, God, it's a great idea, you know. So we are doing it a bit more than we would have before, but like the Hennessy is 250,000 for the whole full prize money. If you can be competitive in them, it's you know, obviously worth having a go.
No, 100%. And we've spoken before about how your role in particular, it's part businessman, it's part sportsman, it's part magician, it's part vet, it's part psychologist. As the success comes, you kind of need to make sure that everything is going at the same time and that you're taking advantage of the opportunities while keeping the quality of the training at the level that put you there in the first place. Is that enjoyable? Is that bit actually, are you kind of in a sweet spot of enjoying that at the moment? Or as the expansion happens, are you finding that challenging? How's that going for you?
Yeah, no, it's look, ultimately, to have the success we're having is incredible. So, like, when you boil it all down, you have to remember that and how lucky we are. There seems to be we're very busy. There's a lot of commitments. There's a lot of you know, various things going on. So day to day, yeah, it can get quite stressful. But we've a great team here working with us, and they relieve a lot of it. I'm probably a bit of a control freak, and I like to be involved in everything. But I have a great crew with me, and very lucky in that sense. But and like I say, at the end of it all, like, what, you know, would you prefer no one looking for you or ever, you know, or to be as busy as we are at the moment? You know, like, we had those quiet days, and I definitely know which I prefer. Like, to have the caliber of stock that we have is incredible. To be training for the people that we are training for is amazing, and to work with the people we're working with is great, you know. So we're very, very fortunate at the moment, and that's it. We're very lucky.
I know, obviously, the winning of the races and the specific moment where the finish line happens and the adrenaline rush that must be is huge and special and important, and the Grand National and everything that happened to Cheltenham last year was sensational. But I do wonder if actually there's a different feeling of satisfaction. As far as I know, you're officially now a free man of Waterford. And the two previous sports people who've had this are John Tracy and Sean Kelly. And some people might not understand fully the ceremonial aspect of it and all that kind of stuff and not take it as seriously. But I suspect that deep down there's kind of a, I don't know, it must make you pause and stop for just a second and go, oof, this is actually something that I didn't know I really wanted or cared about. But now that it's happening, it's pretty special.
Yeah, that's really, you couldn't have described it better. Funny, when I got to the ceremony, I was blown away by it. It was an incredible honor to be recognized by your own like that. Was amazing. All my family were there with me. And look, I feel a bit phony. Sean Kelly, you know, John Trey, like, I do feel a bit, I'm not much of a sportsman now, to be fair. But, I was blown away by it, to be honest. Blown away. I'd like to say an incredible honor. And it really hit home during the ceremony and seeing everyone there.
It does actually matter more when your own people, particularly in Ireland, where we're, you know, not prone to telling everybody in our close circle that we actually like them and are proud of them. But it does seem to matter more when it is your own people who say, you know what, you're actually really good.
Yeah, no, it's very true. Very true. I was blown away by it. It's an incredible honor. It really is. The names that were mentioned as free men of the city was amazing. And the history and just the whole thing, as I say, incredible honor.
One kind of other aspect I just wanted to ask you about, and like keeping on top of your game and making sure that you're getting better the whole time. I know you've got a broad field of interests and I guess you're drawing on as many things as you possibly can. So when you're not just busy with everything, how do you continuously make sure that your own intellectual challenge is continuing to grow and progress?
I'm not sure if it is. You know what? You just learn something new every day, don't you? Or I try to anyhow. And be it in the yard or from somebody or when you read, I'm not sure. I don't know really. I probably wouldn't have the wherewithal to explain it, but you have to keep moving forward. That's all I do know. And that's what we're always trying to do. In fairness, as I say, the team here are brilliant. And like my wife, Heather, she's probably more the cerebral part of our operation. So she firmly keeps me on my toes as well. But she'd have a massive input, always looking at different things, you know, just, I don't know, feed, physios, you name it. Heather's always, she's a massive cog in the wheel, you know. So, but all the team here, like, we're very lucky. Like, as Johnny said, he was talking to Davy Roach, who's one of the head men here, Emmett Rahr. I'm not going to mention everybody, but we've people, the wealth of experience we have is incredible. And I definitely have found over the years, the more you listen to people around you, the better you'll get on. I definitely know I don't know it all. And I think I found that really important, to be honest. And all your clients, you know, their input is huge as well. I love involving them. I love bouncing off them. Generally, most people that have racehorses are incredibly successful in their own field. And, you know, that's just, I think, getting their experience and definitely, you know, bouncing things off them really helps us as well.
Your strike rate as well, Henry, like if you look back at, say, 2008, 2009, your strike rate was 6%, which was a little bit lower than what you'd been used to, but was give or take where you were at. Like the progress you've made, I suppose, roughly since size in Europe, give or take the last decade, you're 18% this season. You've had a 1-2 in the Gold Cup. You've won the Grand National. I know the obvious answer is all like I've a better standard of horse now, but like how did you take that next step?
Just gradually growing, you know, probably growing organically, like, but it is like good horses make good trainers, they make good jockeys. Obviously you have to manage them and look after them. And I suppose it's attention to detail. No stone unturned is probably the most simplest way of putting it. I'm always saying that around here, driving them all demented. But it is. It's so important. You know, like a couple of times there last summer, we took our eye off the ball. A month we were gone. Couldn't have a winner for a month. You know, we just couldn't train a winner. Even in the autumn this year, we let things slip a tiny bit early autumn. And it wasn't as bad as last summer. But so it's all about, you know, it's everyone buying into attention to detail. And just, I think that's probably the simplest way of putting it, isn't it? You know, yeah, like there's so many parts to it, but I'd say that's the best way to put it.
It's a relentless game.
Yeah, relentless. Absolutely. You're as good as your last winner. And, you know, it's amazing what we achieved last spring. But that was 5 weeks. You know, prior to that, I remember walking out of Dublin Racing Festival going, this Willie Mullins, he's just unbelievable. You know, like, and you'd be, it's tough, you know, it's tough. Like, so you have, you know, as good as our spring was, and we had an incredible, our whole season was, I wouldn't swap it, obviously, for the world. But there's still plenty of bad days, plenty of horses getting beaten, scratching your head, disappointments, you know, and obviously the good days are incredible and you have to enjoy them.
I know, like, Michael O'Leary's obviously coming. Sorry, Jerry. I know Michael O'Leary's kind of easing off a bit, but if you look at, like, Willie Mullins has just been, as you say, he's just been, it's been absolutely relentless for as long as I'm watching racing, pretty much. But when you look at the investment that Noel and Valerie Moran are making in horses, which primarily are trained by Gordon Elliott as well, it's hot at the top in Ireland.
Yeah, it's so competitive. It's so competitive. And I know, like, there's people are querying it, but the quality of horse over here is just unbelievable. And and the people that are backing us, you know, my clients, you know, they're giving us massive opportunity. We're giving a lot of money for horses, and thankfully we're, you know, getting the goods. And if you're not, you won't get them, you know, and it's as simple as that. So as I say, you're as good as your last winner. It's so competitive in this country, and which is proven. You see, our pointer pointers are obviously sought after so much now at the sales, at the flat horses in Ireland. I'd say there's during the summer, there's millions worth of stock sold to abroad, to Hong Kong, Australia, America. It's incredible, that side of the industry. Like, the want for Irish form horses is just, it's staggering, to be honest. But that's because everyone knows how competitive it is in this country. You know, you go off with, you know, you're working your horses at home in the autumn before you start running them, and you're going, you know, one is nicer than the next, and you're just going, this is it, this is, it's all going to happen, you know, they're all. And then you tip up and, you know, you got beaten in your maiden hurdle or beginner's chase, and like, you're kind of staggered by that. And then it turns out it was as similar to a grade one. Like, I'd have said Bob Ollinger's beginner's chase the other day, everyone was looking for soft ground. It was the one place in the country we got it. I'd say that was like a grade two, you know.
It was nearly, yeah, nearly ratings, a grade one.
It was like a grade two. Yeah.
Yeah. And just,
I mean,
just
that's
finally
the country we're in.
Yeah, and just kind of finally, a bit of an add-on point for that. You had 6 Shelton winners last season. Britain, as a country, had 5. Now, I did a piece for Darrell O'Connor's racing, his racing yearbook on this, and I started off basically pointing out that this is an aberration. It won't be repeated. But the more I looked into it then, I kind of got worried for the status of British racing. And if you, I don't know if you saw John Bond win at Newbury today, but he's a full brother to Duvan. He's obviously very well bred. He looks very exciting. He was put in as favourite for the Supreme, which, and I was like, God, a British trained favourite for the Supreme. That actually seems mad in my head. But I suppose the question I'm going to put to you is, we do need British racing to be strong, don't we? Like, we need for these, like, serious horses to be over there. We need good owners over there, because, like, I don't think a 23-5 Irish win is healthy for the game in general.
No, but it's made, I mean, like, you can see even at the sales, you know, like, they're trying to, you know, they're trying to compete at the sales now, you know, even more so than they were. It probably isn't ideal, but yeah, they're tremendous supporters of the Irish bloodstock industry, you know, like they source a lot of their horses from here. And yeah, of course, you know, you want it competitive, definitely. At the moment, like in the last couple of years, it swung our way. But I mean, we all remember not so long ago where we were only having one or two winners at the festival. Yeah. You know, we've got tremendous support in this country. And yeah, like it's just, like I say, it's so strong. You know, is it Willie Mullins and Gordon Elliott? Have they just dragged us all up? You know, that we have to, if like we want to compete with them, we just have to. Yeah, that's it. You know, like, and, you know, I've no doubt the English will be, you know, there's some brilliant trainers over there. And yeah, you know, I'm sure it'll be more, you know, it'll start falling the other way in time, I'm sure. But yeah, it was, but Cheltenham was incredible. I mean, it was, yeah.
You take six winners incredible. Every year.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't complain about it.
Oh, let's just keep beating them for now. And when they get good again, we'll worry about it then. I think let's not wish it away and live in the moment. Henry, always fascinating to have you on the show. Thanks a million for your time. Cheers.
Pleasure.
And continued success.
Much.
That's Henry de Bromhead. Thank you. He's in the sweet spot right now. Of an absolutely incredible career. It's Friday Night Racing here on Off the Ball, brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. We should put that in context, Johnny, just in case anybody's like, oh yeah, he's having a good period. He's having an unbelievable period. Like the quality of horses, and you know, part of it is to do with the Gordon Elliott situation. That was another immediate influx of top quality horses as well. But beyond that, like the honeysuckle story is incredible, and the quality of performances from Honeysuckle last year, we raved about them in advance last year. Myself and Tom Malone got quite giddy about a couple of over the, particularly with the Christmas one last year. I just remember thinking, wow, this is like something that you would see in the Black Stallion or Black Beauty. It was that kind of level of cinematic brilliance. And Leopardstown looked fantastic when it was happening. And then Cheltenham comes along, you're like, that looks even better.
Yeah, I remember when I was in my Twitter days after Joe Canning had, it must have been his point against Tipperary in the semi-final that time or something. And I went up on Twitter and I was like, there's only one word for Joe Canning, and that's genius. And some lad replies to me, he's like, no, he's good hand-eye coordination. I was like, yeah, maybe you're right. But in terms of what a genius is, we talk about sport all day, like if we're wrapped up in it. I think Henry is close to that. He's an unbelievably gifted trainer. It didn't happen overnight, but his horses, the way they jump, the way he trains them, the consistency of their performance, he's taken it to a new level. You mentioned rightly the Gordon Elliott fallout, which benefited him. And it was a little bit more complex with Envoi Hélène, who we somehow didn't mention there. He's obviously going to be incredibly exciting as well. But he seems to have gotten him sort of back on track as well. And like that performance of the Gold Cup rolling into the National, the performance of the two horses last weekend. But you expect it from him now at this stage. Just his horses never seem to be out of form. I think he works really, really hard. I think he's a good team around him as well. Between Gordon Elliott, Willie Mullins and Henry de Bromhead and others, the standard of training in Ireland is sensational at the moment.
Yeah, and look, not to labour the point too much on that race at the weekend, the price is probably too short, even though Honeysuckle probably will win. And notwithstanding that, then there are other horses who have a chance of being competitive in that race.
Yeah, like, I don't think in general racing fans want her to be beaten. Like, I'd love if she went to Struts, you know, at the end of this season, unbeaten. I think that'd be amazing. Like, if she has one more full season, obviously, I mean, I'm not writing her obituary here at all, and I'd say there's every chance she'd be around for another season or two after that. But like for her at that level to go unbeaten would be an incredible achievement for a mare. He does mention the mare's allowance. He's very sporting. It does help. It obviously helps get Saldi. But the mare's allowance has been around for time immemorial, as far as I'm concerned, and she's still doing it. And her performance at Cheltenham was sensational. But she did, I suppose, last year in the race, it was probably one of her more unimpressive performances. And I think Saldi, like when Saldi was running the Galway Hurdle, he went off 18-1, which in hindsight looks one of the most bonkers prices of all time. But all week his trainer and his trainer's son, Patrick Mullins, was saying like they're worried he's not quick enough for 2 miles anymore. And he won that well. His performance subsequently at Tipperary was kind of like was right up there as well, and he looks like he wants 2.5 miles. So I think he's. I think it's a proper race. I don't think it's straightforward for her.
Okay, and look, he was talking about Sky Ace. He's a massive price in this race. Well, look, that's the quality of field, and that's the quality of fields that you're getting for these Grade Ones at the moment in Ireland. What else should we be looking at over the course of the weekend for Johnny?
Yeah, so the card that he's the three runners in Newbury is going to be very exciting. We have what used to be called the Hennessy, which is now the Ladbrokes Trophy. That's very strong Irish runners there. But Fairy House really is just cracking card on Sunday with three Grade Ones, a Grade Three juvenile hurdle as well. Maybe not the strongest renewal of the Drinmore, but the Royal Bond looks a cracker. And I think a lot of eyes, obviously, on my mate Mozzie, trained by Gavin Cromwell. We spoke to him not that long ago. He's very, very good, this horse. He jumps great. He's not favoured for the Supreme, because the favourite for the Supreme obviously won earlier for him, the JP McManus colours, the brother to Duvan. But this is it's shaping up to be. The season has really taken off now, I think, because that performance of Apple Tarrant last weekend, considering he was second in the Gold Cup, to win a race like that by 22 lengths, you see the performance of John Vaughan earlier. My mate Mozzie's another horse. Envoy Lane is kind of coming back into the radar now. It's just going to be a really exciting jump season, but my mate Mozzie's exciting in his own right as well. And it'll be interesting to see how he gets on the Royal Bond, because this is a proper test of his ability, taking on the likes of Impervious and so on.
All right, we should tell you about how the Tote 10 to Follow is going. It's been a pretty good, impressive start, it's fair to say. By you, Johnny, you are out to 65.6 points thanks to both Aplutard and Bob Ollinger. Danny Mullins is in second place in our mini table. He's got 12.3 points. I am in the stalls with Nul Point. I'm in third, or 26,471st in the overall standings. So you've got a 20,000 lead on me in the overall standings.
Unassailable, a marathon,
not a sprint.
I think your selections are good. I think we have a bit of crack with this. I think it'll be a bit more competitive than the farce that was the flat effort by me anyway. But, stranger things have happened, I suppose.
We all have Honeysuckle on in the Hatton Grace at Fairy House, but I think I have another couple as well in that too. So we'll see. If you're heading to the Fairy House Winter Festival this weekend, there are full Tote betting facilities available at the races and on tote.ie. And if you do get the opportunity to go and see Honeysuckle in person, it's one of those things that in years to come, you'll be able to say, I saw that horse run and she won this race. I was at it that day. It's like, she's that level of quality. So Friday Night Racing on Off The Ball is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie. That is this week's edition, Johnny, unless you have anything else you want to get off your chest.
No, that's it. It's great to have the quality of the racing and to be able to go like Sunday, you know, long enough without... long enough with no one at the races, and I think people are just there in for an absolute cracker, and it's just great to have, if you're not at the cup final, go racing on Sunday.
All right, Johnny, good stuff. We'll see you next week. Cheers.
See you, sir.
Friday Night Racing
on Off The Ball.
And they're on. Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.